Okay, listen now for the click track, everybody. And away we go. This is track one, take one, yeah.
1, 2, 3, 4.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do it. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hello, my name is Sonic Architect Adam, and this is Before the Encore. It's the pre-summer edition, end of April. I'm recording this in advance, so I hope the weather is good. Certainly hope it's better than it is today, because it is currently pissing down, which is not ideal, but we move regardless. Welcome back to Before the Encore. We're going back into producer land today, and as you saw in the title, my guest this month is Molly Mansukhani. Molly Mansukhani is a producer and violinist based in Dublin from Kildare. She's studied a master's in creative music technology. She's got a bachelor's in music from Maynooth. She's been active. She's been doing lots of stuff, working with some great artists like Kaylee Noble on her debut album, Just a Girl, most notably, I suppose, with the song Say Your Grace, which she co-produced with When the Beat is Bad. Kaylee Noble actually being an artist who I worked with in my early days of my solo stuff as well. So that was a nice little common ground. She's worked with other artists like Roshi and Isaac Jones, Ao Tori, Tara Davey, and many more. And she's doing a lot of stuff behind the scenes. We were talking off mic about what she is up to that she cannot talk about on the podcast. So I got a little inside information there. Definitely one to watch. And the reason why I wanted to have Molly on the podcast is because I see a lot of parallels between our journeys into production. Not necessarily at the start, but definitely since kind of getting bitten by the production bug, I suppose. And I get into that more in the podcast, so I don't want to kind of, give too much away up front. So, yeah, Molly's great. Was really, really happy to have her on the podcast, but it's a long one. It's a good one. I won't delay any further. Let's just get into it. This is Before the Encore with Molly Mansukhani.
She says she a model, popping bottles, got me running full throttle all this life. She don't really want to talk much, she just needs some. She don't really want to say it, but I know she need love. Bad feelings on the bathroom floor, rough day, but she told me that she still want more. Oh, worry about me, damn, but you're heartless. Love is weird, but we make it work regardless. Louis bad, but she don't know where her card is. Said she love me, but she don't know where her heart is at. She a demon, but she dressing like a bad miss. Where she at, trying to put me in a body bag. She all the pimp, she a savage. She want the whip automatic, girl. She said she dropped out of college, but you know that brand new and damaged, yeah. No band, you can call me the hero. Mean in the streets like I'm Robert De Niro. Said your life a move, but you shooting a B-roll. I be walking around like I'm casting the lead role.
Molly Mansukhani, welcome back.
Hello.
I say welcome back, listeners won't have a clue what we're talking about, but this is one of the peaks behind the curtain that this show does expose. This is a re-record.
Yes, this is a re-record. She wasn't slaying last time.
Well, do you know what? Like, it's kind of worked out well, I think, in many regards, because this was at a time, we recorded at a time, so actually we recorded late last year, late 2023, I think. It would have been
in the summer.
Because I remember it was a very nice day, and
it was a very nice day.
It wasn't late last year at all. It was actually mid last year. And there was a couple of things that have like played into our hands with this, right? Yeah. So, you have more music out now. There's more work that's actually out there, and you can talk about it freely because it has.
It exists.
It's tangible.
It's tangible.
Also, like, time has passed. Inevitably, there's going to be more to talk about.
Yeah.
I just think it's all kind of worked out a little bit better.
Yeah, I agree.
Well, it's great to have you back.
Thank you. It's great to be back.
it's fantastic. The reason why as well, and I mentioned this in our last record, the reason I specifically wanted to speak to you is because I see, like, a lot of myself in you and what has, like, happened. I suppose with like how you work in parallel to, you know, a 9-to-5 job. I did that. Mm-hmm. And there's like a lot of, you're working with a lot of like grassroots artists, people on their like maybe first record and just kind of who are getting familiar with themselves as artists. And I hope that's okay to say for the artists if they're listening to this episode. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I see like there's I was just drawing a lot of parallels, and there's a few people who I would see that. But I suppose, in the stage of the career you're in, mm-hmm. is why I kind of wanted to speak to you, because I want to see kind of where you're at, and, you know, I suppose share where I was at the time as well. Yeah. Listeners of this show are going to be sick of me saying the same things over and over again, but in for a penny, in for a pound. So, Molly Mazzucani, producer, you have worked with artists like Tara Devi. You've worked with Kelly Noble on her first record. Kelly Noble was actually the first artist I worked with.
Oh, no way.
When on my own solo music, and I think it was potentially her first release as well ever.
Oh, no way. That's so
back
cool.
in 2018. Yeah. So okay. I want to know your story. I want to know where it started. I want to know about what led you to this point, to this like absolute mad path that we walk down that we love and hate and love all over again.
Yes.
And that's like rewarding, as rewarding as it is. I want to know what lit that fire in you?
Oh, okay. So I guess I've always played the violin. My mum loved Sherlock Holmes and she always wanted me to like play the violin. He played it atrociously in like every like aspect. He was awful at it, but she like fell in love with the instrument and she wanted me to play it. And yeah, I played violin all throughout school. I never really kind of, not that I didn't like it. I just never considered it to be something that could, you know, lead me to anything.
Sure.
I wanted to be an array of things when I was in secondary school. I wanted to be a nurse, a doctor. I was like super interested in like veterinary growing up. And then I had to in TY I had to stick my hand in a horse and help it give birth.
Okay.
And from then on I said never again.
Okay.
So
yeah, the pendulum does swing.
That ruled out veterinary. And then I wanted to be a doctor, and then I just kind of didn't have any confidence and just said I was not smart enough, which like, yeah, fair enough.
I do not think
I'd be able to. They put in a lot of hard work.
They do put in a lot of hard work and dedication, but yeah. I think same can be said for where we're at.
Yeah, I agree.
Being a producer, being a songwriter, being an arranger, there is a lot of hard hours that go into that as well. Mm-hmm. So don't, you know,
oh no, this isn't like self-deprecating. This
is a
thank you. So then I think it was like a week before the CAO had to be handed in, I decided to switch to music. I went into a performance degree in Maynooth, a BMOS degree, which was great. I really, really loved it. And like kind of halfway through that, we started kind of using like, what is that called? Pro Tools.
Yeah.
Sorry. we started using Pro Tools just to add like soundscape to videos and stuff like that.
Sure.
And then throughout the pandemic, I started getting more into FL Studio and stuff like that. I wanted to like make my own music and like record my own violin and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And yeah, I started using FL Studio, and then I finally kind of like progressed onto Ableton once I got an internship with DFL. Woohoo!
Yes. DFL, Diffusion Lab.
Yes.
For those who don't know, Chris was on the show recently as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So after that, then what happened? You kind of progressed into Ableton during that tenure?
Yeah. So Chris kind of looked at me and he was just like, Ableton legend. Switch to Ableton, please. Because
yeah.
Every time, like for people who don't know FL, it's not that great for producing, in my opinion.
No, I think you're right. I would be of the same opinion. Yeah, yeah. Again, former FL Studio user. Yeah. I used it when it was called Fruity Loops. That'll show you my age. Yeah. But I that was the first one I ever touched.
Yeah.
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 It was the first one I ever touched wasn't the first one I ever touched per se. It was more the first one that I used to try and make my own stuff.
Yeah.
And what I will say about FL Studio is it's a great gateway into how sequencers work, into like how a piano roll works, how MIDI works.
Yeah. Even drums, like even the drum rack, even being able to see it.
Yeah, it's great.
It's great. Yeah. It is really great. But the only thing that really like pissed me off about it was the fact that when you wanted to like make a sample unique, you couldn't cut it and it would be unique.
Mm-hmm.
You'd have to like make it unique. Anyway, sorry, that is just useless information.
What this podcast is all about. These people
we
who
love
listen to that, they love
information.
This. Yeah, yeah, yeah. We'll get real nerdy about all this stuff. That'll be great.
Yeah, just give us a few minutes. We will get nerdy, I promise. So then the playground, obviously, like working with Chris, just even watching him, I was able to learn so much about Ableton, about how it worked, about even just like being creative in my own right. And, you know, I was able to work closely with some of the artists that were there and kind of like see how sessions were run, how to like conduct myself in a session, especially as a producer. And then from there, I just started taking in clients of my own. The guys were really nice and they let me like use the studio for like bringing clients of my own. And from there, like it was like a safe space to like bring in people and to like, you know, like, because I still am a very awkward and nervous person around new people. it's really unfortunate. But
I mean, it's a human condition as well. You know,
yeah.
you can't be expected to just immediately lock in
be
like
super
that.
Super confident,
yeah. So it is. It's a practice, you know.
Yeah, it's a practice. I think as I get older, like I've kind of learned to be like assert myself a little bit more confidently. But yeah, and since then I've like met some great people. You know that meme that it's like maybe it's like the friends that we met along the way.
No, yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah.
That just came to my mind. But yeah, and then from there I've been able to, you know, work with Kaylee Noble, work with Tara Davey, work with like an array of like amazing musicians that like I never thought would have been possible, and like able to go to like gigs and like see my stuff performed live, which is like fucking crazy. Mm. I think. But yeah, so that's kind of where I'm at right now with the music stuff. I also work in RAP, so or AAP.
Yep.
It's actors and performance. Jesus, I've been there for a year, so I should know. But basically, we deal with royalties that have been broadcasted to radio. So obviously, whenever your stuff gets played on radio, you get a royalty from it.
Yeah. As a performer on the track.
As a performer on the track, yes.
Yeah, so sorry. It's slightly different to publishing.
Yes. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And yeah, I'm really, really enjoying it. So that's the
cliff notes, I guess.
Yes.
Yeah. What I would like to do is I'd like to just go back and drill into some stuff, and we'll just kind of go through it bit by bit. So I want to talk about the BMOs.
I want to talk
about the course and what that, like that experience. You said you really liked it. I know some people like it's so funny because it can be chalk and cheese for some people. Mm-hmm. In you know the creative landscape that we exist in, because formal education, I guess, can be some people can be allergic to it.
Yeah.
I'm going to put my hand up, absolutely allergic to it. It wasn't for me. It was never really for me. I was never bad at it, but it just was never something that I felt, you know, was a necessity or something that kind of pulled me in.
Yeah, of course.
And I very much actually was nearly a Maynooth as well. I was music technology, I think.
Yeah.
But I passed on that. And yeah, anyway, in a very roundabout way, I still ended up here, which is funny and kind of ironic.
It's so strange.
It's very weird how the world works.
Yeah.
But yeah, I want to talk about that course. Mm-hmm. I want to talk about what you liked about it. I want to talk about what did it give you?
Yeah.
What tools did it give you to then progress? And was that the spark that where you kind of got a feel for what the studio was like? And did you kind of take it from there into production, or whereabouts did it go?
So when I started, I was kind of hell-bent on becoming a professional violinist.
Okay. Like a concert violinist?
A concert violinist.
Kind of thing.
Yeah. Or even like I had big dreams of becoming a soloist like Vanessa May. Just so silly to say.
Now. Not silly. Dreams exist in order for us to achieve things.
Sorry, I've just gotten older, so I'm like, dreams don't exist. No, dreams do exist. Don't worry. We're living it right now. We're living the dream.
Yeah.
But yeah, so wanted to become a professional violinist, and I was just so supported in that dream, I think, from like my lecturer's perspective. I had one lecturer who I really, really loved. Her name was Fiona. She used to play the double bass, and she like was just so passionate about like performance that it made me really passionate about performance, if that makes sense.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, and then like halfway through, I think it was like during the pandemic, I kind of got quite sick, and it kind of affected everything.
Sure.
And it really affected like my confidence, especially with like playing and stuff like that. And yeah, like I've like had like seen production happen before, and like I really wanted to like kind of get more into it and like make more music. And like I think the reason why I downloaded FL in the first place was to like record my violin onto it.
Yeah.
Because I think I wanted to make like violin music. And then I started, well, it was actually my boyfriend at the time. We're no longer together. But it's actually really funny because whenever I was stuck with FL, I'd be like, oh, hey, like I'd ring him up. But like then when we broke up, I couldn't be like, hey,
yeah.
Can you help me?
Yeah, you didn't have the quick manual.
Yeah,
on speed dial.
No more privileges anymore. But yeah, so he was telling me, he used to like DJ or something like that, I think. And he was like, oh, like you should download FL Studio. And he was like pointing me in the direction of like people who like made beats on FL Studio, and like from there I was able to like actually see like what it was like to make a beat or to like make music. Because in my head, and now this sounds like very silly when I say it, in my head that's not how studios work. Like you went in,
in the traditional sense, absolutely, yeah,
and like nothing was recorded separately. Like you just, the band played together and the singer sang at the same time, and like that's how a song was recorded, and it was all done in one take.
The live room was the live room. Yeah,
yeah,
exactly.
And like that, obviously that might have, well, that might have been done years ago, or like, you know, like not everyone sang and played drums or whatever at the exact same time, but like that's just in my mind how it worked. And then seeing like what actually the steps were, really, like, I don't know, I just fell in love with it. And like it kind of, being unwell at that time really made me not want to play the violin because I was so sad.
Yeah.
And then I was able to kind of like concentrate more and more and more on production, and kind of, it wasn't as physically taxing as playing the violin.
As a physical performance.
Yeah. Or like even like, just even like mentally, I feel like violinists and like professional musicians, like orchestral musicians, are always taught that they need to be very perfect, and they need to be very like, they need to stand up correctly, and they need to like there can't be like a little detail that's missed. And like that really affected me mentally. I don't know why. it did.
No,
perfectionism just like sunk into my bones, and I was like, fuck, like I'm not perfect. And it really bothered me. Yeah. But then with music production, I could make as many mistakes as I wanted to, and I could just take it away, or I could just like redo it, and it didn't matter how many times I fucked up. It was like always reversible, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it makes perfect sense. And you know what actually is really interesting about that is like, while you are doing that, you're still perfecting a craft.
Yeah.
Like you, and I get it. I get, like, I don't think, this is one where the purists are going to probably come from my neck, right? But like, I don't think music is innately supposed to be perfect.
No, it's not.
Music is about those imperfections and those moments that happen. And like, as work, like working in a studio, you're going to know. And like, again, we can talk. I'm sure there's plenty of talking points for the records that you've made. But it's about those moments that just happen. And it could be just not correct at all. Yeah. It could be something completely different. But it's about when that happens, you have to grab onto that.
Yeah.
And like, it's not this isn't me bashing the people who've dedicated their lives to being, you know, the soloists or the you know, orchestra musicians who are just incredibly good at their craft. Mm-hmm. It's hard to kind of explain this in the proper way. Two of my closest friends are married, right?
Okay, yeah.
And her,
it's late for them.
That's the easiest way of like, you know, describing it, rather than saying my friend is married to my friend who is also.
Ah, so both of your friends are married
together. Both of my friends are married together.
Yes, okay. Sorry, I was confused by that.
Anyway, I'm going to trim that down in the edit. But two of my friends are married, and my friend Saive, one of her closest friends, her name is Fiona. She's a concert harpist.
Yeah.
And she has like dedicated her life to this. I remember being in school. She was the year above us in school, Fiona. And she was like, I always remember her being near. I always remember like that. And as recently as January just gone, we're recording this at the start of April 2024. She played harp at their wedding.
Wow.
Which was like, again, this is, you know, a decade or more later.
Yeah.
And that's not anything to be sniffed at. But what is like really, what works in parallel is, you know, what we've been doing in terms of our attention to detail in the studio and honing that craft and learning more.
Mm-hmm.
And even like something as we kind of passed over it there briefly, but I would like to talk about the transition of changing from FL Studio to Ableton, because that's a big, like, I don't think people understand how big of an uprooting it is to like learn a digital audio workstation, learn a program, like learn this thing, and then all of a sudden just completely just rip up the rule book and start
all
again.
All the commands, everything that you've ever known, even like moving the mouse, I was like, fuck. I was like, what am I doing?
Mm.
It is very difficult. But like people who can, I know three or four people who can use any DAW. I applaud them
freaks
for that.
I'm going to say it right now, if you're listening to this podcast, you are weird, okay? I want names.
Addresses.
No, it's like, it is tough. Again, I've done it. I've been there. It's like, and you make that decision based on, you know, whatever factor it is. For me, it was like, I saw other people using it that I would have deemed to be more professional, quote unquote. Now, look, FL Studio has made, you know, billion-dollar records.
Oh yeah,
now
like
at this
amazing
point.
Things. A lot from of FL like, Studio.
For context, for people who don't know about FL Studio, FL Studio is what like a lot of the beat makers, I suppose, would make in the rap world.
Mm.
I think Metro Boomin uses FL Studio still.
Yeah, I know. Do you know like Nick Myra and like Internet Money and all them people? I know they did Tekka's album, I think. Lil Tekka.
Yeah.
This is such like, they all have these names
inside
like
baseball
Lil.
Here,
But yeah, like amazing like records that have gone viral or
absolutely
that have like amassed billions of streams. So it's nothing to be like,
it's not to be sniffed at.
Yeah.
But yeah, the transition. So like, again, what was it like and how long did it kind of take to become familiar with the new, with the new thing? And the fact that I suppose you had Chris on side was, it was a big asset.
Yeah. So I think when I first started, I was able to like make loops on FL and stuff like that and was very familiar with everything on FL. The thing I think with watching somebody who is as advanced as Chris or who is like any professional in any industry, you kind of look at them with like a sense of awe, which I like definitely did. He just works so fast and like ideas came to him so quickly. It was like I had thought about something 10 seconds after he was already doing it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that kind of way.
Yeah.
So it was at the beginning quite difficult to watch and to learn and to take in everything. But I was there like nearly every single day. Like if I didn't have college or if I didn't have work, I would be there and I would be sitting in and watching him do what he was doing. And then I would go home. I would sit on the train on the way home and pull out FL Studio and make like an, not FL, sorry, Ableton, and make like an 8-bar loop and just trying to like recreate what I did, like what I saw that day.
Mm-hmm.
And like it, I can tell you here now, like my first beats on Ableton are absolute trash.
Oh man.
Like they are like, a 2-year-old could like sit at a computer and they'd make like more coherent music.
I would love to, like, so are you, I think first Ableton I had was like Ableton 7, something like 7 or 8, and it was on my old like family PC, like the giant PC tower that existed like in the corner of a living room in every, like, you know, 1990s to 2000s household.
Yeah.
And I had it on that, and it was it struggled so hard to make anything.
Yeah.
And I'm just so glad that that computer doesn't exist.
It just doesn't exist anymore.
Because like I don't even know. Like what I used to find was really good, like it, for me when I was learning, was like the remake thing. I'd like try and remake songs.
Yeah.
I'd try and emulate sounds, and like that's how I got. I feel like I'm quite proficient with sound design. Mm-hmm. I feel like if I hear something, I'm fairly able to decipher what it is or figure out how that sound was made, not necessarily to the letter, but I get pretty close.
Idea, yeah.
I get like pretty close. I get like 80-90% of the way there. Mm. Was that like, again, the 8-bar loop thing?
Mm-hmm.
Did you, because I've been there as well with the whole loop thing, and it was generally in FL when it happened, but it did translate over. Did you find that hard to break out of?
No. Like, so even in my sessions today, how I structure them is I will make a 16-bar loop.
Yeah.
And it will mainly be of the chorus.
Yeah.
So if somebody comes to me with an idea that they have already, I will make a 16-bar loop based on the chorus, because at the beginning I struggled so much with how to make something sound bigger.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously choruses, they sound inherently bigger. Like it might be a thing to do with the mix engineer, like physically raising the volume to like make, to like emulate that, like give you that feeling of like, oh, this is huge.
Yeah.
Or like it's obviously just like more elements added into the chorus to make it different. But I struggled with that a lot. So what I do now is I get my biggest chunk out of the way. So like I'll make the chorus and then restructure everything in a way that like I will like work backwards, that will like then eventually lead to the chorus. And I find that that has given me a lot more like capability in making my songs coherent and making them like sound just consistent.
Yeah.
So I used to like really struggle with that. But like the 8-bar loop is definitely something that It just makes sense in my head, if that makes sense.
No, absolutely. And do you know what's actually very interesting? For writing sessions, that's exactly what I'll do.
Yeah.
You know, if I'm coming in and doing a production, I will get there, like production wise, like chorus, let's just like do that. Let's figure that out. Let's make it great.
Yeah.
And then we can like find the, because like you can work a chord progression back into that. You can like change things to fit what that is. Or like what I find to be a really interesting challenge, and a couple of artists I've worked with will definitely attest to this, I will, you know, we'll write a chorus and I'm like, okay, that's the pre-chorus, now let's write the chorus. And like it's cool because you can challenge yourself in that way.
Yeah.
And if it sounds good there, it's going to sound so good as a pre-chorus.
Yeah.
It's going to sound like the best pre-chorus ever.
Yeah.
So yeah, I do that still. I do work to the chorus. I try and find that energy, I try and find that emotion, I try and get, like, again, I the 8-bar loop was something I found quite tough to break out of, which is again why I asked the question. Especially coming from FL to Ableton, and then just for it being like very overwhelming.
But
I like that idea of like getting to the top and then working your way backwards.
Yeah,
I think there's a lot of merit to it.
Mm.
And it's, I think it's fun. It's just fun.
Yeah, like I love it. Like I think like obviously it's like a known fact that like the human brain gets bored after like 4 bars.
Mm-hmm.
So every 4 to 8 bars, you need to make something more interesting, or you need to add something in or take something out. You just need to switch it up, because I don't think you want, like, I think passive listening is okay once the song has been out for like months. Mm-hmm. You don't want a passive listener on the first go. You don't want people to get bored. You want someone to be like, oh my God, like I heard that, or like, this is cool, or this is interesting. So like when you kind of make the chorus huge and then work backwards, you can do so much. Like even like, I know I'm going completely off topic here, but like even, I'm not, but like...
Nothing's off topic here.
It's still about music. I'm not going to talk about polar bears. like even the amount of like 8-bar loops that like I've pulled up in a session that with an artist that like doesn't have anything, and they come in and they're like, I just want to do a writing session. And like it gives them kind of like a taste of like what their song could be, or like what they can kind of hear from your production, especially if you have like... I would like to think that I do have like a wide range of like what I like to do. Like I like to do drill, hip hop, R&B, like all those kinds of like different areas of music that you can like diversify yourself in, and like you can show the artist like, this is what your song could be, or this is like, if you like something, like you can definitely write to it and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So yeah, I definitely think like 8-bar loops are the way. And then like building on them and like working through it, as you said, like even there was a song that me, Kaylee and Jess did. It's actually called Say Your Grace. Mm-hmm. And there is a part of the chorus that was actually the pre-chorus. And then we were like, it just doesn't sound great as a pre-chorus. It mm-hmm. would sound so much better as the chorus. And then we needed like a pre-chorus to obviously like match up to that level of intensity,
or build to it at least.
Yeah, or like yeah exactly, like build to it and like make it sound as if like this song is going somewhere, not that it's like stagnant, or that like, why am I even listening to this, if that makes sense. But yeah, so I definitely think there is a method to like working backwards. I think it is like probably the most effective way to make a song, in my opinion. That like,
yeah, absolutely.
No right way to do it.
But. No, there's no right way to do it. But I do love that. I love that idea of being able to just like break things apart and look at them, you know, in their skeleton, and look at them for, you know, everything that they are. And like there are no rules, you know, like we say this all the time. Yeah. Like there are no rules. It's like it's just... it's great. It is great to be able to just pull on those strings. And what's really great is to be able to have collaborative peers on a project like that, that where you can, you know, you can push those buttons, and you can like, you can, you know, challenge what's there. You can challenge and like try and just think outside the box.
Yeah.
But I do want to talk about that album.
Yes.
Kaylee Noble's debut record.
Yes.
Just a Girl.
Yes. You never
said you'd leave me. I never said I'd stay.
Your first long form?
Yes.
Talk to me about the experience, because I have a couple under my belt now and every one of them is different and I love hearing about it.
Yeah, so I only produced a few tracks on the album.
Yeah.
It was like probably the most like amazing musical experience I've ever had, in my opinion.
Okay.
Jess, like When the Beat is Bad, an amazing producer. Mm-hmm. Kaylee, an amazing songwriter, an amazing artist, amazing vocals as well.
Yeah, so absolutely.
It was just really great to like work with people who like, I felt like, you know, when like you work with people who are better than you, it just makes you want to like...
it elevates you.
It elevates you and you want to be better. And I felt like that was what it was like working with Jess and with Kaylee. Like I really wanted to like... bring like new ideas to the table, bring like as much like good production that I could to the table. I'd never met Kaylee up until the point where we started working together for Just a Girl, and it was like she's absolutely lovely and like she makes anyone feel like super comfortable in her presence, but it was just that added layer of like, I not that I wanted to like prove myself, but I wanted to be an important part of the project.
Yeah, you do want to kind of make it known, like, I'm in the room for a reason. You know, I'm here.
Yeah,
you want to, even if it's just for you, if it's just for yourself as a self-soothing exercise. Mm-hmm. I've been there, like, I've been in rooms with, like, incredible songwriters where, like, I respect them so much. And, like, it's so weird because there's, like, it's a funny dynamic, like, artist to producer. Mm-hmm. I never want there to be one over the other. I always want it to be, like, we're meeting here at eye level. Yeah. And I always try and make this place, like, we're in my studio for the listener's experience. But I like to try and make this place very welcoming. I like it to try and be homely, mm-hmm. You know, cozy, comfortable. So you can just kind of settle in and, like, not feel like you have, like, you're in a place where you have to just, like, be on all the time.
Yeah.
Like, I'm welcoming you here. And I want, again, like I say, to meet you at eye level.
Yeah.
So to hear that it was an experience like that where, you know, you were made to feel really comfortable in that, but also, like, for yourself, that you rose to it.
Yeah.
That's to your credit as a producer. And again, you find that's only going to snowball, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, that's, and that never changes, I find. Even still, now for me, I find myself being like, okay, I have to really...
Yeah, like, you have to, like,
have
step
to really
it up a little bit, or, like,
here,
And even just, like, knowing that you have an opportunity to make something that could be huge is just, I feel like, enough in itself to push you to elevate a little bit. And, like, me and Jess had worked a ton before together. Like,
sure.
We always work on stuff together. So, like, it was very comforting to have her there because, like, she is, like I really bounce, like, our ideas, like, really bounce off each other. And, like, we're very good at working together and making music together. But, like, just to have that added thing of, like, we're doing it for somebody now is, like, an entirely different experience. Because, like, you could, I think... Sad Girl, which is track 6 on the album, I think. I'm not too sure. But that was basically a beat that me and Jess made in her house. And it was, like, we didn't make it with any specific, like, reason. Like, it wasn't for the album. It was just, we made it. Mm-hmm. And then we showed it to Kaylee. Kaylee loved it. She was able to, like, write amazing lyrics over it. So that was, like, how that happened. But yeah, I really loved the whole process of just, like, working very closely with two very talented individuals. And I think it's the first all female work to come out, I think.
In Ireland,
of
I think.
Ireland,
yeah,
I think so.
I think it is.
Because I know Clem Morris did the artwork.
Okay.
She's a graphic designer based over in London.
Mm-hmm. She's great. Great stuff.
Amazing stuff. Yeah. Does a lot of the Kaylee stuff, does a lot of the Nova May stuff as well. Jess is obviously, like, me, Jess and Kaylee, like, you know, it was just really fun. And, like, it was just really nice working with a bunch of, like, like-minded individuals that we could come together and make something great.
So that came out... Last year, 2022.
October of last year, I think.
Yeah. There's been other releases since then. You've worked with Roshi, Aotori, Tara Davey, like I said, as well. Were these all happening in tandem? I know that the wheel moves very slowly in the music industry. We all know that. But, like, was this happening in tandem, or were these all on the back of the success of the Kaylee Noble record? Because, to your credit, to Kaylee's credit, and to Jess's credit, that record was met with critical acclaim, pretty much across the board.
it was really nice to see the way that people received it was amazing. Like, it was very, very nice to see that. And I think it's just for, like, such a small community, I don't think a lot of producers get their acclaim. I think I'd
be with you on that.
You do need to be, like, very high up to get acclaimed by other people when you're a producer.
And do you know what? Like, it's a weird, not to cut across you, I don't mean to, but it's something I do feel very, very strongly about. Mm-hmm. I think I'll always bat for Ireland. I love Ireland very much. And, like, I love the music community that is here. There are so many great people. And I've had the incredible fortune of having several of them on this podcast, you know, mm-hmm. and like yourself included. Like, I think like producers, like as well, and you've hit the nail on the head. I feel like you have to be at a really international level,
mm-hmm.
or to have had something with an accolade attached to it,
yeah.
like a Grammy nomination, mm-hmm. or like a Mercury Prize, or you know, something like that, to get your flowers.
Yeah,
and that to me, I think there's a. We met recently. The reason we're re-recording is we met at the Choice Prize.
So can I tell a story just really quickly?
Okay, absolutely.
So sorry to cut across you.
Not at all. We'll go back to the producer talk in a minute.
Yeah. When me and Adam met at Choice Prize, right, there is a man who looks exactly like Adam. And I went over to him. And when I meet people, I will give them a hug. I'm like a very like, hey, how are you kind of a person. I was like, oh my God, hi. And I put my hand on this man's shoulder and he was just like, no. And I was like, ah! I was like, I'm so sorry.
This man was not me.
No. This man did not know who I was. I, upon closer inspection, unfortunately, because I'm blind, realized it was not Adam and backed away.
Yeah, I had no idea this happened until after the fact. So I cannot be held responsible for this. I have been told there was a doppelganger there that night. I have no idea who it is. Mystery person, if you're around, please make yourself known. Let's go for a pint. But yeah, no, we met at the Choice Prize, and the Choice Prize has recently added new categories, and it's Artist of the Year, Breakthrough Artist of the Year, Song of the Year,
mm-hmm.
and Album of the Year.
Mm-hmm.
There's music industry professionals who are responsible for these artists, these yes. records. There's machines that work in the mm-hmm. background the whole time. And I'm not going to say one can't exist without the other. I don't think that's true 100%.
Yeah.
I do think there's an element of truth mm-hmm. to it. I would love to personally see a producer of the year.
That is
completely, completely self-indulgent on my side. Like, completely is. But, again, last year I had three records out, I think,
mm-hmm.
you know. I like my work. I think it stands to stand on its own merits. You had work out. It was met with critical acclaim across the board. Even producers I know of a different generation, Phil McGee,
mm-hmm.
did the first... three Codaline records. That first Codaline record was incredible. It did it did so well internationally. Like, there should be a bit of recognition there.
Yeah.
You know, it's just, I feel like it's like, maybe it's just me being in the industry and being in the position I'm in
mm-hmm.
and seeing so many other people.
Yeah.
And it's like, I will say it's selfish, but it's like, it's kind of not as well, because I do think that there are so many people like me who are doing great work, fucking way better work than me, should be recognized for it. And they have an online, well, you know, I'm kind of allergic to having an online presence, but just like not seeing, like, I love the liner notes. I love getting stuck into credits and stuff like that. So personally, I would love to see something like that, but
it would be really nice to see acclaim for producers. I think a lot of the time, I do think you're right. To a certain level, like, musicians or like singers would not be able to reach the heights that they do without a good producer behind them. If, like, the amount of times that I have sold beats online and heard them and they've been like outdone by like amazing singers, and I'm just kind of like, fuck, like, that's... you should get a better producer. But, you know, like, in the same way, like, I don't think singers would be really anywhere without their producers or without their managers or without, you know, like, the whole crew behind them.
That's so what I mean. Like, I mean,
I do think it is. I don't think it's selfish of you to say that producers or like managers or PR or anything should be acclaimed.
It's not exclusively down to producers either. I just, like, again, this is the point of this podcast. It's like, I want to highlight people in the music industry who help all of these things get made.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think the artist is like celebrated so much and deservedly so.
They deserve
because,
it.
You know,
these
are the artists. These are the driving force behind, they're the mm-hmm. face behind the music.
Yeah.
They're the people who perform the music.
Mm-hmm.
They're the people who write the music a lot of the time.
Mm-hmm.
But then again, in saying that, to contradict myself completely, there are amazing songwriters who don't perform, who aren't artists. There are amazing producers who aren't artist producers, but there are amazing artists who produce amazing records in a self-produced fashion.
Yeah.
So it's like, it's a weird one and it'd be hard to discern it. I just, I have such a love for the craft.
Yeah.
And I care, like I care about it so much.
Yeah.
And I feel like I care. I like, again, I'd love to kind of hear your thoughts on this. I feel like I care about producing as much as artists care about performing and creating.
Yeah,
you know?
Absolutely. Like, I think that's, I think you would be so unhappy if you didn't care about it that much.
Yeah, exactly.
Because
you gotta love it.
Like, this is such a, ew, I don't want to be, I don't want to sound really old and be like, this is such an industry that will knock you down, but it will. Like, this is an industry that will absolutely, like, you are on the ground on fire. Someone's pouring gasoline on you. Like, that is, like, you're not getting up from that. Do you know that kind of way? It is such, like, it is such a in a way, a thankless industry, but the people who make the effort to celebrate you, or the people, like the artists who uplift us as, like, you know, like managers, producers, like anybody who is like not the face of the music, like, like even the artists themselves, like so many artists don't get the love and the attention they deserve because they don't have a social media presence, or because they're not willing to like make a certain genre of music that is listened to by the masses these days. And it's just, people deserve their, give people their flowers.
Yeah, that's something I have a major gripe with, because like I don't love social media. It's a necessity in our business.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, having an online presence is something that you kind of need to do.
Yep.
And it feels like sometimes your work can't stand on its own merits. But
which is shit.
It's shit. But like, again, at the same time, like I take your point on the thankless industry thing, but I will counter it by saying that I'm seeing it so much less.
Oh.
I'm seeing so many, like every artist I work with is the first person to credit every person that they do. And it's, do you know what? Like fair play. They don't have to do that.
No,
you know what I mean?
It's
just a testament to them as people who care about people who work and like who have a reverence for the people who are involved and work with them and all the rest of it. I feel like we're going down a crazy rabbit hole could end up not going. I spoke a lot on it, to be fair. But I would like to, talk to me about the other releases that you have out now and like how they came about. What was the involvement? Was it different?
Yeah.
And just your experience on all of those. I had mentioned the artists previously as well.
Yeah. So actually, just even going back to your point, it wasn't off the back of the album.
It wasn't off the back of the album. No, okay.
it was before. It was the summer during, and kind of like
everything was happening kind of at the same time.
Everything was happening all at once.
Yeah.
And it was exhausting, but it, again, fruits of your labor.
Yeah.
You know, so yeah, I was able to work with people like Isaac and Roshi. Mm-hmm. And I did strings. So I've actually fallen in love with violin again, which is really nice.
It's great.
And I don't think a lot of producers play the violin, and I think
that's true. Yeah.
Whenever like I say it to people, they're like, "Oh, that's so cool that you play the violin and you're a producer," and I'm like, "No, don't make me blush." but yeah, so I was able to do strings for them, and then also for Malachi, who just had a long face come out, or Malachi, who just had long face come out. And then also for Tori as well. So yeah, I've been like really blessed to like work with so many people who like appreciate strings and who want strings on their albums or on their tracks and stuff like that. I also had Brick Wall by Tara Davey come out.
Yeah, great song.
Thank you. she had her headline show for it, which she performed it.
Yeah.
I heard it performed for the first time and I was blown away by it.
It's a different beast, isn't it?
Yeah.
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 Was that the first time you'd heard your production played live?
No. So V Sensei came out with Model February 14th, 2022.
Okay.
And that I saw that played at his live show, which I was like astounded by. Like me and Jess produced the track and it was like
good experience, right?
It was just really cool, and seeing so many people like it and dance to it and like just appreciate it, and like hearing it through like such big speakers, like nearly blowing your ears off. I was like, this is so cool.
Yeah, how it was meant to be heard.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, that's it. That's something that is genuinely fantastic.
Yeah.
It genuinely is fantastic, yeah, being able to hear something like that. God, I feel like I can't even remember which one it was for me. Try to say that three times fast, but I can't remember which one it was, but I just remember this, like, this feeling of like I was so proud of myself, like,
yeah.
And you know, it was like really reassuring in the sense of like I left a band, mm-hmm, that was starting to do something.
Okay.
We were just kind of, something was, it was either about to happen or it wasn't,
yeah.
And it kind of came to crunch time, and I chose a completely different path. I chose to kind of veer away from what could have been, I guess. And it just really kind of, because
I was reinforced.
Yeah, you wonder if have I made the right decision?
Yeah, of course.
You know, do I miss it? Do
I think that's like, just life?
Yeah, like that, of course.
That's
yeah,
always going to be the case. Yeah, of yeah, like.
But it's nice when you get those little
of
moments.
Course, yeah,
nice when you get the little moments where you can just kind of be like,
You made the right decision. Yeah. I think you made the right decision,
even
anyways.
Just, I did that, and that's really cool.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, it's like,
it can be that simple.
That was me.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, it is. It's sick. And then, like, just even seeing how much, like, the artist loves performing it is it's just a whole other level of, like, appreciation you get from the song, I think. But yeah, like, so I have, like, loads more that's to come. Like, big things coming.
Big things coming. Coming soon, everybody.
It's always going to be a song.
Yeah, it's always going to be a song.
I'm not releasing a book anytime soon. That's unfortunately.
It. Yeah, here we go, right? Here's the biggest industry secret before the Encore podcast. You heard it here first, everybody. If any artist says, and I love you all so much, if anyone says big things coming soon, it's they're releasing music.
Get fucked. But like, it's a song.
Yeah, this, I say this all in jest.
Yes.
Very lightheartedly. But no, it is always a song.
It's always a song.
Yeah. And in fairness, so you've got a catalogue of stuff.
Yes.
Coming.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. With like, even as you said, like artists that are just trying to, like artists that have had like their first few releases and are just kind of just like finding their feet, but like also like kind of know the direction in which they want to go.
The vision
yeah,
is there.
They have the vision, yeah. I'm currently working with people like Aluna, Sona Blue, Tara Davey, of course, Remy, you know, just like people who I'm like, these guys are it,
yeah.
in my opinion. Yeah.
And is that like something you found you've got a real grasp for? Like, because that's one thing that I kind of didn't realise was part of the production side of things was like there was an artist development element. If you want there to be.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah.
I really did. And it was something that I kind of felt, I don't know, it was like we were, because maybe there was part of it where it was like we were growing together,
mm-hmm,
in the early stages.
Mm-hmm.
That's cool. And now I feel like I'm kind of in a position where I've got a bit of experience. I've done a couple of albums. I've done a couple of this, a couple of that. And I've done a lot of different genres. So now I kind of have, I like being able to be like, I can see something in this direction.
Yeah.
And just trying to like plant the seeds even.
Yeah.
Is that something that you have enjoyed, or is it something that kind of has just happened, or is it just kind of, do you even feel like that's where you're at all?
It's like a little bit of both. Like, you know, sometimes like even going back to like the whole discussion about like the 8-bar loop, like sometimes I'll show artists an 8-bar loop that I've been working on, or, you know, something that I'm like, this could be really cool. And it's not exactly their sound.
Yeah.
Or it's not exactly like, they're like, I want to try something different. And I'm like, okay, bet. Like, let's like, like, let's try something different. And like, it ends up just being like a genre that they've never tried before, or that they like, that they always wanted to. But I feel like a lot of people put pressure on themselves to like stick into like a certain box of like your R&B or your like trap or your hip hop or like anything like that. And then when they get to like expand their own kind of repertoire a little bit, like, I think that that's like a really cool thing to see. And like, I always feel like really privileged whenever people like stuff that I make that's not their style, mm-hmm, and they like do like awesome things over it. Like, they're like, they make amazing music to it, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. Do you feel like that's because you kind of have developed a unique style to you now, or do you, because I know you mentioned like drill, R&B, hip hop, like that kind of stuff. Do you feel like you've kind of maybe transcended a little bit?
I don't know. I do think, I don't want to be like, the things I make are so unique. Like, no one else has ever made anything like this.
but at the same time, I think everything is unique to the person making it. You know, I think it's an objective
the definition
fact.
Of uniqueness.
It's an objective fact. But like, you know what I mean? I feel like everyone has their own, their own kind of unique flavor that is naturally added to things.
Yeah.
Is that like is that kind of obvious in the stuff that you're making at the moment? Do you feel that?
Like, I think so. Like, I don't want to be like, yes, and then someone comes along and they're like, what the fuck is this? And I'm like, you know, but like, I think if I were to like describe my music, I'd be like very like ethereal, dark pop sounds with like very heavy drums, or like just like very like, very like layered music with like, I don't even know how to describe it. Like, it's just always something that I've like really been drawn to. It's just like really light, floaty melodies with like fucking like huge drums or like a massive like sub bass that it's like, holy shit, like this is gonna like like what? Like, I have such an interest in film music, and like I love Ludwig Göransson.
Ludwig Göransson.
Like, I think
scores in Ableton, by the way, everybody.
Oh, for my God, Slay. No way.
Yeah, if you haven't seen it, I'm going to send you a link after this.
Please,
by the way,
do.
There's a great thing of him breaking down the Oppenheimer soundtrack, where has like scored it in Ableton. It's fucking amazing. I'm sorry.
I've seen him, like, he does the Childish Gambino stuff, and I love it. You know, like, I just love his music, and like, I listened to the Black Panther soundtrack. I love We Know What You Whisper, and it's basically like African throat singing, and then this huge bass, like, and it literally sounds like you're going to war. Like, that is like, and then obviously like when you pair that with like the scenery of Black Panther, or even like the story of Black Panther, you understand that like this is like talent. Yeah. That makes sense. Like, I think it is very difficult to score something to a movie because you need to like evoke emotions that you actually can't see. Mm-hmm. Like, you need to get into somebody's mind or get into like the viewer's mind and be like, what would this person feel like? What will make their hairs stand on edge and go so well with the visual canvas of what I'm seeing right now?
Yeah.
So I really love that type of music. And I've always taken a lot of inspiration from classical music. I'm half Indian, so I fucking love like Bhangra music or like Carnatic singing or just even like traditional flutes and stuff like that. I love putting that into my music, and I love creating like just like a blend of like different genres.
Yeah.
It's like as much as I can describe it. So that's such a long-winded.
But they're like,
do
you know what? That answers like the next question I had, because I was going to say about like the, when you were talking about, you know, film scores and how like the kind of the talent involved there, and to be able to just like draw those things out of thin air is amazing. But like, you answered it in the sense of without kind of explicitly saying it, but there's like so many different parts of your like musical identity, I guess.
Yeah.
And you are kind of consciously putting those together.
Yeah.
Which is nice. And it's working.
I think it's cool. Like, I think it's I feel like I said this last time, I'm a very straight person, if that makes sense.
Okay, talk me through that.
Not like I'm just like a very like straight and narrow person, if that makes sense. Like, I like my schedule. I like, if something does not go to plan, I get very anxious about it. I'm very type A, if that makes sense.
Okay.
And with music and with production, I feel like I don't have to be. I feel like I can release that side of me that is not type A, and that is just willing to kind of like experiment and do anything, because like, I am actually so afraid of going outside the lines in real life that in music I can just do whatever I want, and like, there are no rules, and I can like break whatever rules I want to, and like it could still sound like amazing. I don't know if that like makes any sense, but like
makes perfect sense.
That's because just I love doing it so much. Like I yeah, you know
that is it's the beauty of it, and it's like the fact that there are no rules is the
yeah.
is the best thing about it. Because and like again, it's something I say in a lot of my production sessions, a lot of my writing sessions, and mm. I'm sure it's the exact same with you. It's like we can do whatever the fuck
whatever.
We want.
Yep.
Like I I'm here. For you, I'm mm. here to you know, let's explore some ideas that you've been having.
Mm-hmm.
And then I can put, I will naturally put my own twist on it anyway.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I think if you're already at the stage where you're in the room with someone, you've got that level of trust and like they kind of get mm. what you're doing and you get what they're doing. And that's like, that's where that real like magic can mm. happen. Not to be cheesy, but like, it, you know, it was probably like that with the Tara Davey thing and like with
yes.
with Kaylee and Jess and stuff mm. and like there are those moments where it's just it feels like it was meant to be that way.
Yeah, like even with the Tara Davey stuff, like Tara is a like very R&B live sounding like Victoria Monet type, like, you know,
mm-hmm.
esque and with Brick Wall, obviously, you have like the really heavy 808s, the sub basses, the drums that are just like not. It's. I really liked Brick Wall. I thought it was like, obviously, looking back, there are obviously things I would change. And
same with all of us. It yeah. doesn't matter. There's always going to be that. You have to just like learn to let
you
go.
You just have to let it go. Yeah.
Your artist likes it. It's the main thing.
Yeah, exactly. It was done in a very small time frame. So the entire production, all of the sessions, everything was done within a month.
Okay.
Which I feel like isn't like that short for a song.
Not the worst.
Like, it isn't the worst. But like even for like Tara's music video and stuff like that, it was done within the month.
Okay.
Which like fair play to her for getting like everything.
That's someone getting their skates on big time.
She was respect, very like yeah. like this needs to be done in a certain time frame. And she did it, which was great.
Underneath that brick wall, show me how to peaceful. I know that you see right through this fucking brick wall. You do. I know you see it too. I know you feel it too. So what we gonna do?
But like I think like we even had this conversation the other day, like we were both like, oh, we will take our time next time. But sorry, yeah, like going back to the main thing, like Brick Wall was so, I feel not like different for her, but like just kind of like an extension of what, because like she only had one song out called She Ain't Me.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you've heard it before.
Yeah, she opened for Melina in the Workman's Cellar for Melina's headline show for her album.
Oh, I remember this. Yeah.
It was so great. She was fantastic.
She like incredible. But like I feel like She Ain't Me is very like, not like normal R&B, but it's very typical R&B. It's very like typically jazz, neo-soul, R&B, like that kind of genre.
Mm-hmm.
And then I feel like Brick Wall was like a little bit more electronic, a little bit more like,
it was a bit more
modern
avant-garde. Yeah,
yeah, like, and yeah. I feel like I do make things that sound weird, and like I like that.
Yeah,
I don't know, I think it's like
great.
I think it's kind of cool. Like I don't think like, what's the point in making music that sounds the same to everything that you're hearing right now?
We make music in our own ways.
Yeah, exactly.
You know? And we like, my whole thing is just how I love, like, maybe I'm a bit more old school in the sense of I'm not necessarily like cooking up instrumentals or 8-bar loops to turn into beats to just like to kind of ship out or have on hand.
Yeah.
And that's not, I'm not slighting that. It's like, it's just not something, it's not the production style that I like to do.
No, man, that's
what
fair.
I like to do is just help artists realize their ideas
mm-hmm.
and develop
yeah.
them
yeah.
and try and like I'm hearing maybe like a demo that lasts about 40 seconds
mm-hmm.
or I'm hearing like a verse that someone's written or a chorus that someone's written, a hook,
yeah.
something like that. I'm like, this, okay, let me take this
mm-hmm.
and let's just like pull on the strings.
Yeah.
Let's just figure it out together.
Mm-hmm.
And then I will like offer my ideas in terms of like
yeah.
production and arrangement and all of these things. But yeah, it's like we all make it in different ways, and
yeah.
we're all, it, you know, it doesn't matter how it sounds. If you want to make stuff that sounds like that, then just that's great, you
just
know?
Just go ahead and do it. Like, there's always somebody that's going to be listening to your music. Like, I listen to a genre called clowncore, and it's...
Clowncore.
I don't know if you've ever heard...
I've never heard clowncore before.
It's... If anyone's listening, look up clowncore on Spotify. It is...
I'm fucking scared, to be honest.
It's actually weirdly satisfying to listen to.
And
I would...
Can you give us some, like, maybe, some, like, examples of songs, first of all, or actually, secondly, what are the tropes of this genre?
So... It's just silly. Like, so they'll have like a honk in it, and then no, like genuinely, they'll have a honk, and then it'll go into this like really weird like liquid drum and bass beat, and then it'll be like dun 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 dun.
Circus music.
It's just so fucking weird. And I just...
That does sound insane, by
but
the way.
It's great. And like, I listen to it on my morning commute into work. Like, it's...
I love the idea of like you on a Dublin bus or like whatever bus. You
off might the dart be, out to Blackrock.
And just like listen, like with that, like sunglasses on in the summertime, just like completely stoic. Everyone else is like, I wonder what she's listening to.
I mean, like, yeah, right, I think it's actually really interesting to listen to. Like, I used to love screamo growing up.
Yeah.
And I vividly remember going to TY Work Experience to Maynooth in a bus and listening to like Blackfield, not even Black, Jesus, Blackfield Brides is not screamo. I'm so sorry.
More on the emo side, I think.
It was like Of Mice and Men, and I was listening to them.
Oh, right. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. That's different.
That's different. Yeah. Sorry. I was like, Blackfield Brides, you dumb bitch. No. And I was listening to it on the bus, and like, I think this, like, 18-year-old just like turned around, like he looked at me, and I was like, oh, I was like, he can hear screaming through my like headphones. He's like, what the fuck is this kid on? But like, yeah, I feel like I've always had like a very like eccentric avant-garde taste in music.
But like, that's how interesting stuff gets made. You
know
what I mean?
I think like when you pull from different genres.
100%. Like, yeah. What's kind of like what I'm loving at the moment, I'm like, I have a little bit of my own music that I'm making just on the side as like something to kind of scratch that itch that
big
I've,
things coming soon.
Yeah, big things. They fucking are not. But yeah, like to scratch that itch that I kind of had after leaving the band, and like I wasn't making music to be the artist anymore. And I did enjoy that. I kind of grew out of love with it, fell out of love with it. Yeah. And you know, now I kind of feel like I'm in a position where I can just indulge in it.
Yeah.
And for the first time, do it by myself and then bring people in if I want.
Mm-hmm.
And like, I grew up listening to lots of different things, but in my teens, like a lot of people I knew and a lot of people I hung around with were like listening to emo music and were listening to like pop punk and all that kind of, and again, some of the heavier stuff.
Yeah.
But like, I just, like, at the time, like, in retrospect, I love a lot of that music.
Yeah.
Fall Out Boy are one of my favourite bands of all time.
Fall Out Boy have remained in my top five.
Yeah, it's like, so good. Blink-182, love them. First big gig I ever went to was Blink-182. But,
no way.
Yeah, but I love dance music.
Dance music was
always, like, something that I loved so much. And I specifically trance music.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that was because of how it made me, it was the only dance music that like elicited genuine emotional response in me every single time. It was like the fucking weirdest phenomenon, and I'd never really experienced that with anything that I discovered for myself. I'd always received that from you know, recommendations from, and this is how you discover music as a teenager, of course, like people give you CDs, people whatever, again, really showing my age here.
It's fine, I'm the same. So it actually wasn't that long ago.
But like, you know,
don't worry.
You know yourself, like people giving you CDs, people whatever, exchanging things, and you know,
your little MP3 players.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you're Creative Zen, or you're listening to someone else's iPod or something.
Yeah.
And this is the first thing I kind of discovered for myself, and I was like, I have to hold this so close to my heart, because and I still do.
That's so lovely.
You know, like 15 years later, like absolutely, even longer maybe. And I've tried another thing that I've found I really like is like, I love piano music. I love that, and I like to try and, you know, mix those two things together where I can make something that like you make will like make someone want to dance and get a lot of like get a lot of life from and get a lot of affirmation from.
Yeah.
But also, like, will, you know, tug at those heartstrings and like a little bit of that. So, like, it's fun to do those things. It's such a great exercise. And, like, it's what most of the producers I love do is they have those things where they bring a certain set of tools to the table.
Yeah.
And you're clearly doing that.
Oh, well, I'm trying to. I think it's, like, really good to, like, listen to a ton of different genres of music and, like expand the way that you think about music. Like, even in college, now we would listen to absolute, like, we had a module called electroacoustic music, right?
Okay.
And it would be somebody banging on, like, a kettle. And, like, how many noises can you make from a kettle? Like, how can you manipulate things?
How many
things?
Plugins do you have?
Yeah. Like, how many things
just
can...
Just going to throw that out there. I'm only joking. I know what you're getting
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
And it sounded like hell. It sounded absolutely fucking awful. But then you realise when you kind of, like, go into, like, making music that, like, obviously things, like, tapping on a microphone can, like, you know, like, anything that you want to put into your music can fit in it somewhere. And, like, I think even just going back to, like, the, like, my master's and, like, my, because I did a master's in creative music technology, that, like, expanded the way that I thought about music so much.
In what way?
Like, just about thinking about things that aren't music that are considered music to some people.
Are musical.
Yeah.
Okay.
And, like, I would rather do anything than listen to electroacoustic music. Like, I think I'd rather walk on nails.
Okay.
Truly. But
tell us how you really feel. I'm only joking. Sorry.
No, don't worry. I was going to say something really bad.
No, I know what you mean, though. It can feel like things like that can feel kind of one dimensional.
Yeah. But my lecturers would sit there and they'd listen to it for hours. They'd love it. And I'm like, how are your ears not melting off? Like, how do you not need to do some, like, how are you not drinking at this point? Yeah.
10 in the morning on,
like,
Tuesday.
Yeah, like, how are you not, like, how is this not a problem for you? But yeah, like, it really expanded my thinking of, like, what music is and what people, because music by definition is just organization of sounds. I think that's the correct, like, that's the actual definition of music. It's just, like, organized sound. But when you take organized out of it, like, is that not music anymore? Like, is, like, disorganized sound not music? Like, do you know that kind of way?
Yeah.
But that's, like, it really opened my mind, to be honest, about music. And I think I love putting things that aren't musical into my music. Like, I love...
Best thing ever.
I think it's so much fun. Like, I what did I record the other day? I think I, like, recorded, it was so silly, like, a motorbike going by.
Great.
But, like, even, like, something as, like, that you hear in, like, Winston. And do you know, like, who Winston are? They're, like Jess put me onto them. They're, like, a Canadian, no, they're not, sorry, they have a song called Canada. they're Swedish, I think, or they're, like, Eastern, that part of the world.
Yeah, Nordic. Yeah.
Nordic, yes, yeah. Thank you.
Scandinavian.
Maybe cut that bit out.
Yeah.
But they're, like, they produce all their own stuff and they, like, put, like, motorcycle noises into their music, and it's just, like, it's so cool seeing that, like, things that aren't musical being made musical, or like, and I think, like, clowncore, when people make things that are inherently not musical but then organize them in a way that makes them sound musical,
sure,
it is just such a talent in itself.
Yeah.
And it mightn't be the nicest thing to listen to, but it is something that, like, deserves, like, oh, fuck, like fair play for doing that.
Do you know what? Like, and this, again, in my own version of that, I guess, was, like, when I, and even still to this day, I will bat for dubstep. I think, like,
dubstep is sick. But, like, it's so much fun to listen to.
But, like, people who, like, if someone listens to this, probably, like, you like dubstep, you're a fucking loser. And, like, fair enough, right? But I don't, like, actively listen to it. But when I do hear stuff, I'm, like, I remember this being, like, such a big thing when I was younger, and I was like, it was kind of that, like, the first era of Skrillex and, like, Boys Noise and,
like, Deadmau,
yeah. Yeah, and, like, but I suppose, like, less him, more so the kind of other guys, like, I can't remember, like, Virtual Riot, like, all of these, Panda Bear, all of these kind of things,
yeah.
And I was like, the sound design is I was nerding out every single time. I was like, how do they make that? What's that? How do I make that? Like, what processing are they using here? And I was like, it was so beneficial to me now.
Yeah.
Because now someone plays a thing, I'm like, and they're like, what do you think that sound is? I'm like, I know
what that is.
It's like, well, that's a square wave with a flanger, and it's like a low pass filter, and the filter is like, stuff like that. Like, real nerd stuff.
Yeah.
But like, I feel like that in that way, where it's like all of these, this complete chaos.
Yeah.
This absolute, like, if you were to take these sounds by themselves, you'd think it was like a fucking Transformers movie.
Yeah.
But all of them organized in a certain way, I was just like completely fascinated. Yeah. So I'm going to rescind my, ragging on you about Clowncore, which I still think is,
I do think
by
it
design,
needs to
it's a funny name.
It is. It's hilarious. But I think one person makes it, and I actually, obviously not one person makes it, but like, I think one person is famous.
Like co-opted it.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
And I found them through TikTok, and I was like, just like scrolling through the comments, and people were just like, this person's in a lane of their own. Like, no one else can, you can't say that it sounds bad because you don't have anything to compare
to reference it to. Yeah.
You're just like, what is that meant to be? And like, obviously I think, okay, not to rag on anyone in particular, but I'm not a huge fan of Ed Sheeran.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
I used to love his music growing up, but like, now I'm just kind of like, it's not really my style anymore.
Of course, yeah.
I wouldn't listen to that, but yet I would listen to Clowncore. You know, so it's a kind of like, you don't, people can't say what good music is and what good music isn't, because it's a very personal opinion.
Completely subjective.
Yeah.
There is no such thing as bad music.
As bad music.
There's no such thing as a bad song.
There is somebody in the back arse of the West of Ireland who will listen to your music. You know, that kind of way. It's so subjective.
Yeah. It is. It's great.
Yeah.
What's next?
Oh, what's next? Big things coming.
Big things coming. I'm by what's next, I mean, like, production wise, mm-hmm. what is your next kind of, I guess, goal? Is there anything, like, is there a particular, like, you spoke about a couple of genres, and then now you're kind of in this place where you're really, I just kind of getting it from you. I hope it's okay to say that. I think you're quite comfortable.
Yeah. Yeah.
In what you're making right now.
Yeah.
And, like, quite confident in it.
Yeah.
Is there anything, what comes next for you?
I don't know. I think just continuing to like develop myself and like my own sound, and also obviously develop alongside the artists that I'm currently working with.
Of course.
I'm
very important.
Yeah, like I'm really, really anxious to get music out, I think. Like, I'm like excited. Like,
yeah.
I really want to get music out. Like, I really want to like work with a bunch of people and like try and get as much music out as possible. Obviously, it has to be good music, and like, it has to be like good, like, you know, like, it has to be like thought out properly. Nothing can just be like put out for like, yeah.
Yeah. Consideration is very important in this world that we live in. And it's the antithesis to what a lot of people like to do in terms of like, this is a great thing, let's just get it out now. Take your time.
You need to sit on it.
Take your time.
If it's great now, it'll be great whenever.
Yeah. And it's the best advice I ever got was take your time, because we've all rushed things.
Mm-hmm.
And but like, what you gain in time, you sacrifice in quality to some extent, not necessarily the same extent all the time.
Yeah.
But the things that stand the test of time, in my opinion, mm-hmm. are the things that are, you know, are considered and measured and well taught out.
Yeah, I definitely agree. Like, that was such a huge lesson with Brickwall. I think like, me and Tara both said to each other, like, we will take our time with the next one.
Mm-hmm.
Because like, there's no point in putting something out and you've both worked so hard on it. And there was an entire team behind Tara who did her, like, her visuals and everything like that. And obviously Tara herself, like, worked herself very much so to the bone.
Certainly
with that
sounds
one.
Like it, yeah.
Yeah, and it's just like, you want to be like happy with it, and you want to look back on something. And obviously when you look back on things, you're like, I should have done this better and I should have done that better, and that's growth and that's good. But you don't want to look back at something and we're not disappointed in it at all. But like, you don't want even there to be like the slightest bit of feeling that like something should have gone in a different way.
In a different way, yeah.
You know?
And and then outside of music?
Like, I think outside of music, God, this is actually so embarrassing because somebody asked me what I like to do for fun the other day and I was like, oh, I like making music. I like, I work in music.
But you know what? Like, it is one of those things that, like, you know, I find, like, personally, I'm like, I'm kind of taking a lot of film in at the moment.
Yes,
and yeah. I'm trying to, like, I'm not necessarily listening to as much new stuff. I'm kind of coming back around, though. The pendulum's kind of swinging in the other direction now, where I'm maybe starting to kind of gravitate towards just consuming a lot of music again.
Yeah.
But it does kind of consume. And that's the reason why I asked, because, like, I'm the same. I'm like, I find that it, like, there are things that, of course, there are things outside of music that we like to do for fun. But it does, it is omnipresent, you know?
It does kind of consume you a little bit.
In a good way, I think.
No, in a very good way. And I think, like, if you, like, you know, if you want to do anything to do with art, like film or music or just painting, like anything, you kind of do need to be consumed by it a little bit.
Yeah.
You need to be like a little bit weirdly obsessed with it and a little bit strange to want to be obsessed with it.
Yeah, no, that's a hard agree.
To want to do well with it, because everyone likes music. Everyone likes film. Everyone likes art. But the people who, like, want to do it for a career or who want to do something with it and not just appreciate it are those who need to be obsessed with it, in my opinion.
No, I think you're right. I would definitely share the same opinion.
Yeah.
I want to go back on something really quick before we close, because you're in a position now that I was in before where you're working a job.
Yes.
Monday to Friday. And you are doing music outside of those hours.
Yeah.
This is something I feel very strongly about.
Mm-hmm.
But I just want to know how you're balancing everything. Are you balancing everything?
yes, to a certain extent. I thankfully work with people who are very understanding on both ends. So, like, my job, I have an amazing boss and it's a very small team of four people.
Right.
And my boss is amazing. So is my manager and I work with, like, again, four people. So absolutely, they're all amazing. And then all the clients that I work with are also equally as amazing as, like, just in so far as, like, understanding that, like, I don't want to be like, oh, I'm such a busy person, but I do feel like I am quite busy and, like, I travel a lot as well. So I am balancing it to a certain extent. I am very tired. I will say that.
Perpetually.
Yes.
That doesn't stop.
That doesn't stop. And I think the older I get, unfortunately, the more my body fails on me, which is not fun to be saying as, like, a 23-year-old. But I think, like, just working with people who understand that, like, not everything could be done in, you know, at the drop of a hat, and, like, things will take time, and working with people who value me and who appreciate me enough that despite the time that I'm taking, they want to work with me and they believe in me as much as they do their own project.
Yeah. Well, that's nice. That's really good. And it's great to have, like, to hear that you have people around that, you know, because, like, it's, that can be, that, like, that's a huge asset. And I was very fortunate to be in a similar-ish position. I wasn't working within the music industry. So there was less of, I suppose there was less of an understanding, from my perspective. But, you know, I've been doing what I've been doing for a while now. And it's always interesting to hear, because we're in a world where, like, you know, there's very few people who can go the whole hog and do it full time. And that's, like, that's sad. It is really sad. But at the same time, we have to live.
Yeah. It is such a privilege to be able to do music full time.
Yeah.
You know, or to do any kind of thing that is, like, freelance full time.
And I absolutely don't take it for granted either.
Yeah.
It is. It's tough. It's hard to, you know, walk that line.
Of course.
It's good to hear that it's, like, not. Yeah. It's not too.
No, it isn't.
It's,
and I
it's
think
it's not kind of burning you out too much, I guess.
No, and, like, I wish I didn't stutter so much. I love what I do. I love Working with rap and working with performers' rights. I'm hugely passionate about it, considering that I went to college and did not know, like, for performance, mm-hmm. and was never mentioned to me about IMRO, about rap, about PPI, like, you know, like, about anything that could help me in my career as a performer. You're just kind of thrown out there, expected to, like go, be free. Like, yeah. Sorry if you fail. Like, it's not our fault, though.
Yeah, and then, I get that. It's like, yeah. It's so, do you know what? It's like, I have to, like, I do commend rap. I think rap are a phenomenal organization. Anyone who makes music or is in the music industry and is not a performer or has performed on a song and isn't a member of rap, please sign up or AAP.ie. And yeah, it's like stuff like that, you know, is it's so integral to mm-hmm. the survival of musicians. So yeah. I think, you know what, rap, IMRO, all of those, collection societies, PRS, all of them do is yeah. you know, is excellent work.
Yeah.
Especially at a time where streamers have stopped paying artists below a certain threshold that's come in. Mm. I know there's lobbying going on in the United States for artist pay rights and stuff mm-hmm. like that, where they're looking to implement something where artists are paid a penny per stream, at least. Which would be huge, mm-hmm. but you know, we'll see what happens. But
hopefully,
all of that lovely politics aside, Molly, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
Not at all. Thanks for joining me. And if people would like to find out more about you, where can we find you online? Where can we listen to your music? Talk to us.
Oh, so Molly four times on Instagram, and. Oh, I should probably link my music somewhere, to be honest. I'll link it in my bio. I'll link my SoundCloud in my bio on Molly four times on Instagram.
Perfect.
So, yeah, thank you.
Well, all of those links are going to be in the show notes as well. So anyone who wants to learn a little bit more can just check the show notes and all the links will be there ready for you. So yeah, Molly Montecani, thanks very much for joining me.
Thank you so much.
Thanks so much to Molly for joining me on the podcast. We got into a lot there and it was a lot of fun. I was a bit self-indulgent for a while, but in post, I hope I cleaned that up a little bit. No, I will have cleaned that up a lot. And yeah, we got into a lot. We touched on a lot of things. It was great. I really enjoyed having Molly in and it was really cool to chat to her. I suppose after re-recording, like I mentioned in the podcast, having lots more to talk about than we did last summer. Plenty of releases under her belt now at this stage, but you can see all of what Molly does. Instagram's probably the best place to catch her. It's at Molly four times. All of her links are in the show notes. You can listen to samples of her work and all the rest, and you would have heard those in the episode as well. Thank you so much for joining me again for Before the Encore. We're back at it. We're back in full swing. This is great. We're having a good time. Who would you like to see on next? Let me know. Is there anyone you think would be a good fit? I have some good ideas. I'm trying to get in touch with people. I'm trying to, you know, expand. I'm trying to talk to people who are on different parts of the industry. Let me know if there's someone I haven't covered yet. It's at No Encore Show on Instagram, or you can join us over on Patreon. It's patreon.com/No Encore, where you will get bonus content. There is bonus audio content over there right now. You will get all episodes 24 hours earlier than the main feeds on the likes of Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and the rest. And they will be ad free, as well as weekly previews, which come from my good self. As screened by Dave, of course, but as well, you can catch us on the main feed every Friday. Search No Encore in your podcast catcher, you'll see us. We'll be right there. Plenty of episodes to get back into. It's a top five every Friday. Myself, Dave, and a guest. Sometimes we run it solo, and we have a great time. We have a good time doing it. It's always fun. So join us over there. Be sure to follow us. Rate us 5 stars. A rating would be great as well, if you could. It helps with visibility of the podcast. And yeah, we just really appreciate your help with that one. So thanks so much for listening. I've been Sonic Architect Adam. This has been Before the Encore. There will be an encore. I'll be back at the end of next month. Take care. Thank you.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Welcome to Sincerely Sloan, presented by Uninterrupted. I'm your host, professional tennis player, wife, parent, and entrepreneur, Sloan Stevens. As an athlete and as a person, my journey has had a lot of twists and turns, from moments of adversity and doubt to unimaginable triumph and satisfaction. Throughout the season, I'm joined by some of the biggest names in sports, entertainment, culture, and a few members of my tribe. Our conversations keep it real and push it past skin deep. We reveal the perspectives, routines, and products that allow each of us to show up at our best. Join me on my journey of self-discovery and many, many laughs along the way. Sincerely, Sloan.
Ever Googled your own name? Prepare for a shock, because your personal info, including addresses and phone numbers, is out there, especially with the recent hacks at some big phone and healthcare companies. But here's where Aura steps in. Aura scans the dark web for your sensitive information and sends real-time alerts. Aura also actively requests that your information be removed from data broker sites, putting you back in control. Aura provides you with a complete online safety toolkit, credit and transaction monitoring, a secure password manager, a privacy-enhancing VPN, parental controls, and more. Try Aura risk-free with a 14-day trial at aura.com/safety. That's aura.com/safety. Rest easy with Aura. Visit aura.com/safety today.